In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Then that's our thing. Where'd you get that shirt? I like that shirt.
I've had this shirt for a long time.
Oh, where did it come from?
I think my mom gave it to me.
Wow.
Most of the A&W root beer stuff I have came from my mom.
Who was either the A or the W in the original A&W root beer?
No. The W in A&W does stand for right, but...
See?
No, she just liked...
And that's what the A stands for.
No.
Yeah, the original company was called and right.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. We've been recording for a bit now, so...
Okay.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat. The only podcast that smells like warm banana nut bread.
Really?
Yeah, smell the podcast. Go ahead, you at home, too. Smell the podcast. You'll see it smells like warm banana nut bread.
Huh, how about that?
Yeah, you normally we don't pay attention, but...
No. I guess I just got used to it.
Yeah. This is episode
76.
Trombones. I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And I usually do that the other way, don't I? Now we say, and this is episode.
And then I'll say it's episode 76.
Trombones. So welcome. For those of you new, because that happens, William and I found a hat that's magical in that it has its own email address that it checks magically, and then things sent to it, like questions and topics, get put on little half 3x5 cards that it spits out to us, and we draw them out of the hat and talk about them till we are bored. Not till you're bored, till we're bored.
That's right.
Different thing.
Which can sometimes be right away. And other times it takes a long time.
Really long time sometimes. And that's pretty much our whole premise. So, yeah.
It's a magical hat, that's all.
Of talking.
I mean, what can you say?
Yeah. So, how was your week?
Oh, you know, pretty uneventful. I mean, I've been working all week on some projects and stuff, which is interesting and exciting to me, but I don't think it would be to anyone else. So, why don't you just tell me about your week?
I think pretty uneventful, too.
Well, last week you didn't really get to talk about the previous 2 weeks, so maybe you need to catch up.
Yeah, but I don't remember those anymore. Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Well?
Things are going crazy at work. Dresden Files game is going well. We just wrapped up our second story arc. And this one got pretty dark and heavy and... disturbing, but well, it was pretty cool.
I think last time we talked, you said there was a real... I mean, everything was crazy.
Oh,
someone got pushed
through
a portal, and someone started a fire, and...
Yes, and that whole thing was to rescue these young women, who we didn't successfully rescue.
Gracious.
And so this episode was actually going to where they are, which was in the possession of the very kindly drug-addicted homeless man that had helped us out, who it turns out is not a kindly drug-addicted homeless man, but in fact... a flesh-eating ghoul.
Oh.
So they had to go rescue girls, of which only 3 of the original 6 were successfully rescued.
And the other 3 deceased, or...?
2 are deceased, and 1 is stuck on the other in the Never-Never.
Oh, right, because...
Because of the portal. And actually, the next story arc is going to involve the gentleman who did that. One of the player characters is going to undertake a quest to attempt to go find her and rescue her.
Mm.
And we'll drag everyone else along. That's going to be the new arc. which most of the players don't know about, but none of them listen to this show, so it doesn't matter.
They're going to go into the...
Into the Never Never.
So, in the Dresden Files world, what's that like going over there?
That could be absolutely anything. Hmm. It is the spirit world, it is the world of fairy, it is the world of dreams, it is unreality, as it were, so they could run into absolutely anything. And probably will.
I see.
Still working that out. I worked out things, not so much specifics about what will happen, but about what the particular player who is going to be the focus of this wants, what concepts he wants his character to deal with.
I see.
And that's what I'm really focusing on here. In this last set, the player character who was the main focus really wanted to deal with his family stuff. I think we talked about this before, wanted to deal with his family things. And one of the girls that was kidnapped was, the whole thing was him rescuing his sister.
Oh.
And that has become a big thing. And he and I are actually going to work out, now that everybody's safe, his family-specific reaction. Because we couldn't do it at the time because he was suffering a concussion and had to go take care of that. And meanwhile, they had to take all the girls.
Well, did he rescue his sister or not?
He did. He did. They successfully did. And in fact, killed the ghoul, which was surprising to me. But they came up with some really creative ideas and did some impressive things and eventually killed the ghoul.
Now, this game, aside from the fact that this is the first time you've done Dresden Files, you're also kind of taking a slightly different approach to play, I understand, right?
Well, I'm a different system. I'm doing the Dresden Files RPG pretty much the way it's done.
Oh, I see.
It's a different system, and I personally am GMing in a different way.
Okay, right. So there's two kind of ways where this is a sort of a new experience.
Arguably three, but yes.
What's the third one?
Well, because the setting is new, the system is new, and the way I'm
okay,
doing
it. Oh, okay, I gotcha. So,
but the setting and system are sort of a package.
Right, right. So I'm curious to know, overall, how do you feel that's working out?
I feel it's working out wonderfully, and I feel like players to varying degrees are getting into it, which is a big thing. It requires a lot of buy-in on the part of the players. They have to do a lot. A lot of stuff for me early on was getting over the nervousness of not knowing, not being able to plan ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I have, it's very nice, and it involves a lot less prep work on my part. And I enjoy that because I'm just sort of going with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very much enjoying it. I read a book, a short book called Play Unsafe, that I highly recommend to any role player or GM. That deals with a lot of ways to be more spontaneous and improvisational in your gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big eye-opener, too. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it, and I have a great group that's doing it.
Now, would it be fair to sort of rate your experience playing Dresden Files as compared to other games? Because since you're kind of doing it a different way, would that be like comparing apples to oranges? Or could you say, yeah, this game is an 8 compared to the other games or something like that?
I don't know that I could quantify it to that degree. It is a very good game. I like this game in general. I think I like the Fate system. It may turn out that going forward, we just play games in this system.
I see.
Switch genres. I'm not positive on that one. And it's also quite possible that I won't run all the games. But I do enjoy the system a lot, and it's a very different way of role-playing. The system is very different in how it approaches
the
things.
System. Is the system more conducive to this sort of newer way you're approaching?
I feel it is, yeah. Okay. That's sort of why I decided to do this now.
Okay,
I see. It is more conducive to narrative play as opposed to simulationist or gamist play. And that's largely what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm. So you can adapt this system to other games and...
Oh, yeah, this is a system. The people who wanted to make the Dresden Files game took this system, which already existed.
Oh, already existed for something else. Well, what else was it used for?
It's just out there as open source called Fate.
Okay.
The people who made it and really wanted to showcased it with a pulp game called Spirit of the Century.
Hmm.
That's a pulp game set in the 1920s based on a... I know not too much about it, but it's basically based on the setup where people who were born on New Year's Day in 1900 are all of a particular ilk, and they tend to be very heroic and strong and very important in the world, and this is a club of those people that go around doing extraordinary things and adventuring and all this.
I see.
And so all your characters are people from that sort of thing. But it's a very pulp adventure thing set in, like, the 1920s.
Okay.
Dresden Files did it. There is a science fiction game based on an old British comic series called Star Blazer. That is a fate-based system. There is a hard science fiction game called Diaspora that is fate-based. There is a thing called Strands of Fate that's not... It's really sort of a more specific gaming system built on the Fate engine. But it has more specific things. But it's not a game in and of itself. It's more one of those sort of universal gaming systems that you could pick the genre for, sort of thing. Those are most of the ones I know. It's a fairly popular system right now, though, so a lot are coming up out of it.
This is sort of changing the subject, but I wanted to ask you about this. Did you ever hear the game Crimson Skies?
The video game?
Well, it was a video game.
I used to own it.
Oh, okay.
I may still own it, but I don't think so.
Because it was a board game first.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And then it was there was a different kind of game where you had little collectible aircraft. I mean, I don't...
So like a miniatures...
And what is that exactly?
Usually that's referred to as like a miniatures war game or something, but okay. I don't know that that would quite be as appropriate with Crimson Skies.
Well,
it's not really a war game in the same way.
Well, I suppose not, but I mean, I don't know very much about the game and how it was played in its different incarnations. Mm-hmm. It was a board game originally. It was a video game, as you pointed out. And then they also had this incarnation, which is that, like you were saying, a miniatures. You know, you can collect these little miniature airplanes as part of playing the game. But that's not a role-playing game, is it? Or is it
depends
a strategy?
On who you talk to, but I would say that is very unlikely.
It's like a strategy?
It's more a strategy game.
Okay.
It essentially like a collectible card game, like Magic or Pokemon.
Yeah, I suppose. Now, when
miniatures.
You played the video game, what did you think of it?
I liked the premise. I did not get very far. I was very bad at it.
Bad
it
at it?
It was one of my earliest games when I got the Xbox, and I was very bad at it. I crashed a lot. I couldn't finish the missions. I got shot down a lot.
But you liked the premise.
I liked the setting.
Yeah.
Very much. And I don't even know. It was just sort of an alternate world,
yeah, an alternate
it?
Universe where...
Because it was very much a pulp feel, and it was all about flying.
Well, what happens is... to me, the whole backstory is just really fascinating. It's one of the best alternate histories that, or I shouldn't say it's one of the best alternate histories. It's one that I like a lot. There are a lot of more interesting alternate histories, probably, but and I'm not going to remember all of it precisely. But things happen during the Depression a little bit differently, and the United States sort of breaks up into smaller regions, and. You know, there isn't any national cohesion to create the interstate highway system
that's,
or anything
that's
like that.
That's the big thing about it is basically because for political reasons, the highway system in the U.S. never gets created.
Right, right, and cars don't really obviously catch on. So instead, planes do, which is interesting because you know flying. There were a lot of people, amateur flyers, for a period of time there, but of course flying was more expensive, and they did get the interstate highway system, and cars were running on petroleum, which was very cheap. You know, so all of these things happened that made cars be what cars are today. But basically what they've done is they've created an alternate history where instead airplane flying becomes more popular and more accessible. And so that's what people do. And the United States really no longer exists the way it did. And it's these smaller regions. And there's, of course, air pirates and stuff. And I don't know, it's just very cool.
Yeah.
It's a very cool setting and a very cool alternate history idea. But you can't find the board game anymore. Although I think I might have seen it for like $500 on eBay or some
like
crazy
that.
Thing like that. You can find the miniatures, but I don't know anything about the miniature game. And the video game, as you said, was for Xbox, not any platform that I have. So I was just curious, you know, if you knew about it or played it or...
Yeah, no, I did or still own it. I don't know which.
But
if I can find it, I can loan you my old Xbox, not the Xbox 360, the Xbox, with it, and you can play it.
Well, I don't know if I'd be any better at at it. I just thought it was kind of a cool idea.
I don't know if I'd be better at it. At this point, I might be. I mean, I've played a lot more video games in current incarnations.
It seems like a game that, if you made a video game that was really strong in story as well as, you know, all the other stuff, I think it'd be really fun. But
it definitely had some story. I mean, I just didn't get very far. Okay, so anyway, so that... not much else to talk about. I did see... Well, part of... IFC did a miniseries. 6 half-hour episodes that they showed 3 one night and 3 the next night that had been coming for a while called Bullet in the Face. They've been advertising it for a while, knew very little about it. Knew very little about it. Basically only knew mostly that Eddie Izzard was in it. And so we're like, okay, we'll check this out. And a little bit of hints of stuff that it's in this fictitious city that's basically run by 2 crime bosses that are rivals. Hmm. And so I start watching it and not really sure what I'm supposed to do. It's trying to be very sort of noir, and it's these 2 crime bosses, and in particular it's dealing with this one lieutenant of theirs that's this truly psychotic killer kind of guy. Oh. And you figure out pretty quickly it's all a comedy.
Oh.
Like, they did serious gritty, like, it looks serious gritty noir kind of stuff, and it is very violent and very mature and all this, but it's total comedy, and the whole thing is that during a heist, he kills this cop, and then he gets shot, he gets a bullet in the face. But what they do is the cops take him and take the face of the cop he killed and replace his face with it. And then basically force him to agree to pretend to be that guy in the hopes that him being on the police force and knowing what he knows will help them beat the crime, the particular mob boss once and for all. And so they tell all of the rest of the police department that the cop wasn't really shot, he was just wounded, and it was a pretty serious injury, so now he has some memory loss issues and speaks with a heavy German accent, because he does. And his old partner partners with him, even though he hates him because he shot his partner, and all this, and it's just ridiculous. And I'm really enjoying it.
Okay.
Trish is, the producer has stopped enjoying it. We saw the first 3 episodes. We still have the other 3 sitting there. And after the first 3, she decided she was done. So she's not watching it anymore. But I'm finding it very interesting. I'm really obsessed with the theme song from it, which is by a relatively brand new performer, who I'm still trying to figure out stuff for. And it's hilarious because I mentioned this on Twitter.
Yeah.
And like an hour later, 2 people have favorited the tweet about it. 1 has retweeted, and it's actual actors from the show. Not Eddie Izzard, not Eric Roberts, who's the other name you might know in this one. He plays the other mob boss. But the Eddie Izzard's significant other, who's this femme fatale one, and the partner to the cop, both like were responding to this, and then like the next day, the actual creator of the show responded to me and was like, oh, you can check out this video where the theme is and stuff. And I was, on one hand, I was like, this is so awesome. And on the other hand, I'm like, they're so desperate for attention.
Yeah, I guess.
But so that was kind of cool. But yeah, the guy who did it is apparently the guy who originally created Sledgehammer. Do you remember that old show in the 80s?
Oh, yeah. That was
like a satire cop show.
Yeah.
It's that guy. And it's that kind of, it's a modern take on that sort of thing. So for those of you who can handle it, it's very violent, it is very vulgar, it has bad stuff in it that I firmly believe is ironically. Like, it's got some very blatant sexist things in it that it's doing it to make a joke, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, if you're interested, if you think that kind of thing could work for you, I could definitely see people getting offended by the show or finding it not funny. But if this kind of thing sounds like it could be funny to you, I would highly recommend you check it out. And it's only 6 half-hour episodes.
Well, who makes it?
So it's not
again?
A big commitment. It was on IFC.
What's IFC?
Independent Film Channel.
Oh.
And so, yeah, I would recommend it to people who think that might work for them. And I think it's pretty funny, and I'm way obsessed with that song. I don't know why. That's what I was listening to when you came in.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So we should probably get on to the hat, because it's already been like 20 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Wheel of Morality. Turn to... No, wait. That's not... We need a little, like, chant for the hat.
Wheel of...
What? Are you going to talk about
hobos? Oh, crap. I still haven't read the hobo thing. Did you read the hobo thing?
Yes. Well, of course I did.
Yeah, I figured you would. That, when I saw it, I was like, we need to send this to William. And I'm like, oh, wait, she did. The producer sent a link to a thing about the hobo convention.
In Britt, Iowa.
In Britt, Iowa. Which I only know about because of William's books. Maybe we'll have to talk about it next time after I've actually read it. Okay, what you got?
Let's see. The question is, should the movie Back to the Future 4 be made? Why? And if it was made, what would be a cool plot? Signed, Doc Brown.
Oh, Doc Brown.
Wouldn't Doc Brown know if it was made?
Doc Brown can't pronounce gigawatt, so I'm not sure we can assume anything about what Doc Brown does or does not know. That was a weird thing for me to put together. Because when I was a kid, 1.21 gigawatts sounded fine. When I got older and giga became part of the language because we ended up with gigabytes in computers, and then many years after that for me to suddenly realize, wait, he meant gigawatts and said gigawatts, which is dumb. Like, it was just such a weird thing over many, many years. I have a confession to make.
Oh.
I did not enjoy Back to the Future 2. I did not see Back to the Future 3.
Wow.
I, at the time, when Back to the original Back to the Future was pretty big, was close friends with a neighbor kid who was 1 year older than me, who was absolutely obsessed with Back to the Future. Also obsessed with Michael J. Fox as a whole, but absolutely obsessed with Back to the Future. And he and I listened to the LP soundtrack over and over again. We saw that movie so many times, and we went to the theaters when the second one came out, and were so excited, and I did not care for it. And I did not ever see the third.
And did he like the second one?
I can't recall now. It was a long time ago. I can't
really
remember.
Why would they make a fourth one? I don't even understand why this question is being asked, really.
The trilogy is quite popular, as I understand it.
Yeah.
So it's just a thing. Remember that thing you liked? Would you like it if they made more of it? You know?
No, I don't know. I
mean, you understand that?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Really, because a lot of times what you like about the original is that, you know, it worked just as it was. Why?
We're not positing a remake. We're positing a sequel.
I know, that's what I'm saying. What? Why would you do that? I mean, what?
Okay.
It's a pretty well self-contained trilogy. So
do you?
I mean, you know.
Do you remember Star Wars?
This is case in point. You know, don't if it's not broken, don't fix
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I'm not arguing for this. I'm attempting to explain to you how humans work. Do you remember the original trilogy for Star Wars?
Sure.
Do you remember when they went to make the more?
Yeah, the more. Yes, I do.
Do you ever remember, not even necessarily feeling yourself, but understanding why other people were excited and looking forward to this? Or from day one, when you heard about episode 1, 2, and 3, were you like, this is a terrible idea, and I can't understand why anybody would ever want
it? I mean, from the very beginning, the first film that George Lucas made was called, you know, episode 4 or whatever, so that's a little different.
Very little different.
No, it's a significantly... it's a significant difference, because, you know, this is a film that from the very beginning, you almost anticipate there's going to be, you know, prequels and not sequels, and that's different too. You need to pick something that is a course, it's hard to do because, I mean, here's the perfect one. Back to the Future trilogy is a perfect one. Why would you do anything else with it?
Well, one could argue, why would you do anything after Back to the Future?
Well, yes, exactly. And I agree the second two movies really weren't as good. But now that you've made them, and they were only okay, and it's only an okay trilogy in my opinion, would make you think you could make a fourth one that would make the whole thing better? Indiana Jones. That's even a better example. Okay?
Yeah.
Indiana Jones, the second film I thought was horrible.
Which I still have never seen.
But the third film ended the whole thing on a positive note. Mm-hmm. So let's just leave it. Why?
Now here's the thing.
Tempt fate.
I don't remotely disagree with you. What I'm attempting to address is your apparent inability to understand how anybody could ever want to.
I don't understand it.
Okay.
But, well, now here's another thing.
So you basically don't understand why anybody would ever make a sequel to anything?
No, I can understand why someone would make a sequel to some things.
Why would somebody make a sequel to some things?
Well, because, I mean, now that we live in a world where sequels exist, a lot of people make first films with a notion that they might make more. So, if the first one's successful, they actually have some story ready for a second and a third one. They're not going to have to just pull it out of the air because, oh, this film unexpectedly made a lot of money, so let's just make another one and not even think about what's in it. But for those people who were just going to make a one-off film and they didn't even think about any more story, and it's pretty well self-contained and it works, and someone comes along and says, wow, that made a lot of money, let's make another one, the response should be, just to make a lot of money shouldn't be the motivation to make another film here. There's no more story. This was a standalone film. It's pointless to make another film. If we make another film, it'll be crap. It won't make any money, and it'll just make the people who are fans of the original mad.
Again, you're getting your incredibly sound argument in the way of me trying to teach you. We all know this. So, the only reason somebody would make a sequel to something is because it is common enough nowadays that they would hold back some story specifically for a sequel.
Yes, exactly.
So the people who made sequels before it was the thing to do were all idiots.
Pretty much. And if they made a sequel that worked, they got lucky because there's really no reason that should have happened. Okay.
So,
and proof of it is that most sequels aren't any good.
So shouldn't have made Empire Strikes Back.
Well, that you keep bringing that up, but that's different. Because I feel that George Lucas, George
New Hope is quite self-contained.
No, but when it was created, it was not. He called it Episode 4, like there were three episodes we didn't see beforehand, and he fully intended to have, I don't know how many after, actually more than two after that.
So the other reason to make a sequel is if you're already planning on making a sequel.
Well, you just said that when you said they're holding back some story so that they can, that's what, yes, exactly. Right, if you make a film and you intend to make more or whatever, that's one thing. But if you made the film and it was a self-contained thing, you didn't really think about making more, and then someone comes up, well, here, perfect example of this is Highlander. The original Highlander movie, you can't come up with a more self-contained story probably than that one. I mean, it ends where he no longer, you know, he's the last one, for God's sakes. Yeah, I love that
they get the prize every movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's the last
one in every movie.
He's the last one. That's the whole point of the story is he's the last one. He gets the prize, and it's significant for changing the world and all this stuff. That's it. Yeah. There is no way you can make a sequel to that, story-wise or any other way. And of course, when they tried, it was horrible.
Yeah, by the way, spoiler alert, they get the prize at the end of every single movie. Actually, I take it back. They made like a fifth one that I didn't see that I read about on thing. I think they still get the prize then.
But Lucas, even the three movies that he made, you know, the prequels, are kind of covered by the fact that he said Episode 4 or whatever. And that's fine, even though I didn't think that the prequels were very good.
He always said there were nine.
That's right, but later, you know.
Yeah,
that's so what
I'm totally cool for him to make those.
I don't
7, 8, and 9.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I would have liked to see what other things happen after Return of the Jedi, and I thought that the novels people wrote for events after that were all very good. I mean, I don't think I read... I mean, I didn't read all the Star Wars novels, but probably the in chronological order, the first maybe six or seven, they were all really good. And there were that series by... I don't remember his name. He had one of the first trilogies in chronological order anyway, after the film. God, what's his name? Zahn? Timothy Zahn?
Timothy Zahn was particularly big. With his, I think he had the New Jedi Order.
And they were very good. Very good. So, you know, that, but that's a whole different thing. I'm talking about people who clearly did not intend to make any more films. And just about every single time that happens and they just decide, well, let's make another one, it doesn't work. And when it does work, okay, they got lucky. But, I mean, as a rule, they just shouldn't do it.
Let me ask you this then. Are you opposed to the new story that Gaiman is going to put out, the Sandman story?
No.
You're not opposed to that?
No. Because... The thing is...
Well, technically, it is a prequel, also.
Right, but most of that... I'm mostly talking about films, keep in mind. I mean, when you're talking about comic books, and maybe it would even apply to comic book films, you know, you can reboot. I mean, the rules are completely different. You can start over. You can have prequels. You can have sequels. I mean, that's the nature of comic book storytelling.
But it's not the nature of movie storytelling.
Not really.
Okay.
Although, again, now that we live in the world of sequels, it kind of works a different way. But I think that most people, if someone thinks they can make a cash cow out of something, they will set it up for a sequel somehow. And that's
absolutely,
that's different. But you know, there are a lot of films that they're just standalone films. You know, there's no reason to make a whole bunch of movies out of them. And no, I don't understand why a fan would want anyone to do it if they liked the original and they thought that it wasn't really set up for a sequel. I don't know why a studio would want to do it if it's a huge, huge risk that it might not be successful. You know, I just think people should have learned their lesson by now. Studio, people, fans, whoever.
It's a financial lesson, and so that's always tricky for the studios especially. But I agree with you that I don't want a Back to the Future 4. I think it would be ridiculous.
But who does? I mean, is someone talking about this?
No, I don't. Not that I know of. I mean, Doc Brown is, but he hasn't worked in a while.
Should the movie be made? Well, I mean, obviously, I don't think it should be, and I've kind of explained why already. But if it was made, what would be a cool plot?
Well, how did the third one end? There was weird things where people got married and had kids and...
The third one ended...
We had a fucking time travel train.
That's how the third one ended, basically, was that...
Well, and it spun off into an animated series that I saw a little bit of.
Yeah. And there's actually recently a video game made that's terrible. I mean, I played a demo of it. Just it looked horrible, but I thought, let's just see how bad this is. Really bad. But anyway, so in the third one, it's kind of about fixing Marty's future and that all worked out, but he had to go back to the past. Anyway, whatever. You know, there's always past, future, everything else. No, I think in the third one he just went back to the Wild West or whatever.
The second one ended with the doc being gone and then him getting a letter saying that
he was in the Old West.
He was in 1885.
Okay, so he goes back to the Old... Yeah, third one he goes back to the Old West and whatever. Comes back. But then Doc Brown ended up going to the future, and so Marty asked him what the future was like, and Doc Brown said, "Oh, it hasn't been written yet," or whatever. I don't know. And I suppose the way it ended, a lot of things could happen. I mean, for example, you don't see what Marty's actual future is. In the second movie, isn't it the second movie, you go into the future and you see Marty's life and it's not very good?
We go into the second, into the future in the second one because his kids are assholes.
Yeah. Well, and what you find out is that one of the reasons he had such a horrible future was because he, he did some drag racing thing and was in a wreck and hurt his hand, so he couldn't play guitar or whatever. Once he decides not to do that thing, you know that his future is changed, but you don't know how it's changed. You don't know what happens. Does he become a rock star or what?
Less important, because the important thing is that white people actually invented rock and roll thanks right. to him.
So if they made a fourth one, I suppose the natural thing to do, I don't know if it's the smart thing to do, but the natural thing to do would be, obviously, to fast forward into what became his future, and that it was a lot better than the future we saw in the second one. And some people might be curious to know what his improved future looked like, because that was never shown as far as I know. And then, of course, if you're going to have Michael J. Fox in it and some of the other characters who are now older, invisibly older, I suppose...
In the future, Marty McFly gets Parkinson's?
Well, I... No, I... That,
you know he's got a new show.
No, I didn't know.
Yes, that. NBC is making it. They're making a show loosely based on his actual real life, including him dealing with having Parkinson's. It's a sitcom, though.
Oh.
But, yeah.
No, I didn't know that. But I presume they'd incorporate his kids in it somehow, or maybe even grandkids by now. I mean,
yeah, because you try and do the next generation and then you can keep it going forever.
And again, I'm not saying this is a good idea. I'm saying this is likely the natural direction they would go.
I think you're right. That's how they go. I don't think it's a good idea. I think there's only one way to do it that would be good. The only way you can, you know, go back to dinosaur times. I want to see Marty McFly and Doc Brown fighting dinosaurs.
Those two actors, Michael J. Fox and
yes,
Christopher Lloyd.
Really, that's my whole...
As they are now.
That's my whole thing. I want to see Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, and... who's his mom?
I forget.
Leah Thompson fighting dinosaurs. And I don't even need a plot after that.
Well,
like,
no.
5 minutes to set
no,
that up.
That's right.
And then just 2 hours of them fighting dinosaurs. With whatever weapon you want. Guns, spears, rocks, lasers. I don't care. I want to see those three actors. We don't even have to call them by their character names. I'm fine if we don't even bother to not say, hey, Michael. Hey, you know, I just want to see. I want to see Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, and Leah Thompson fight dinosaurs. It has been a dream of mine my whole life. When I learned about dinosaurs in school, that was my saddest moment, was realizing that I would never see those three fight dinosaurs. And then Jurassic Park came out, and a little seed of hope grew. But I didn't dare to dream that it would be... Yeah, so get on that, Hollywood. And Doc Brown, I'm with you. Let's do it. Dinosaurs. Let's move on to another question.
Yeah, let's do.
Thank you, Doc.
Yes, Doc. Thanks for the question. Sorry that we weren't more enthusiastic about Back to the Future 4.
But really, it's a terrible idea, so shut up, Doc. I feel like that was like a Bugs Bunny. Shut up, Doc. this is from Beth.
Beth.
However,
uh-oh.
It has been a bit abridged.
Oh.
Or digested, you might say. By the way, yeah, Beth's still in there. Beth was just commenting today on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and got a response from the producer. Quite an involved response, talking about her Couch to 5K stuff and what plan they're using. There's links to that. Lots of stuff said there. So, yeah, it pays to go back and look at older ones sometimes, because they have more stuff going on. And, yeah, there's a great conversation going on episode 75 right now, so you should check that out, themagicaltalkinghat.com. You can also post your own comments there or on this episode. By the time you're listening to it, it'll probably be up, because that's how the internet works.
Yep.
So do that, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Go there now. Well, yeah, go ahead. You can listen and type.
Sure.
It happens. All right, Beth writes, Dear the Magical Talking Hat, please explain retiree fashion. It seems to have gone unchanged for a long time.
Well, that's I don't
Beth.
Know. I don't know about that, because certainly the stereotypical media portrayal of it has gone unchanged. I mean, you look at the way retirees are portrayed in movies from the 80s and you look at the way retirees are portrayed in movies today, and they pretty much always look the same. And did we talk about that? Yeah, we did, sort of, because we were there was a
you were dressing as a retiree,
as a retiree cosplay.
But I do I find this very intriguing, because I do wonder if you go down to Boca Raton, Florida, and wrangle up old people today, and if you were 20 years ago and you went down to Boca Raton, Florida, mm-hmm. and wrangled up old people of the same exact age.
Hey, this sounds like the plot for Back to the Future 4, I think.
Five. Four has to be the dinosaur.
Oh, right, right. Okay, five.
This can be Back to the Future 5. Comparative retiree fashion. That's a hell of a secondary title. Back to the Future 5. Comparative retiree fashion.
All right, so you're wondering if they would be noticeably different.
Which also might be the title of this episode.
You're wondering if you did that, if they'd be noticeably different.
Can I fit the whole thing, you think, on the episode
I
title?
Have no idea.
Back to the Future 5 Comparative Retiree Fashion? Or do I have to just call it Comparative Retiree Fashion?
I really don't know. I mean, okay. That's...
Yeah, no, I wonder. See, I don't know the answer. What do you think?
I do think that Beth's suspicion that they would be nearly identical is the common perception, you know, of people who aren't retirees.
But how accurate do you think that is?
I have no idea, because I'm only going on what I see in TV and movies also.
Because old people make us nervous and we don't want to actually go near them.
No, it's not that. It's...
Have you smelled an old person recently? It's disturbing.
I wonder, though... yeah, it's hard to say. You know,
we have a lot of retirees.
Well, of course we do. I mean, yes, we have retirees in Iowa. They're not all in Florida, but that's just what you think of. Is Florida or Phoenix retirees.
And let's be honest here. You are wearing jeans and a t-shirt. An older A&W t-shirt, but it's a t-shirt, you know?
Right.
Like, the iron-on patch aside, it could be... 20 years ago, somebody your age could totally be wearing that exact same thing. 30 years ago, somebody could be wearing that exact same thing.
30 years ago, I was wearing
this exact
same thing.
30 years ago, you were wearing that outfit. Like,
But 20 years, 30 years from now, I suppose I'll still be wearing jeans and a t-shirt.
You will be dead.
No, I won't be dead.
You will, in fact.
No, I won't.
I've foreseen it.
Anyway, I won't be wearing... loafers.
I'm going to feel really guilty if you die in less than 30
with
years.
With black socks going up to the middle of my calf.
Yeah, but you also won't be in Boca Raton, Florida.
Right, but I don't know. When I think of older people and the clothes they wear, I automatically go back to when I was growing up on the farm and the older people, the older farmers and whatever. But they were wearing, they didn't wear t-shirts, but they wore, well, maybe a t-shirt underneath their button-up work shirt. And
jeans or overalls.
Jeans, overalls, or they could be wearing these pants that were still cotton, but they were, I wouldn't call them like, not like nice slacks. I mean, they were pants that they would work
like
in.
Like Dockers or something.
Kind of like that, sure. And boots, you know, or...
But those aren't retirees. Those aren't the people that she's talking about.
Well, some of them were retired, though.
But that's not... Yeah, she's not talking about retiree from a definition. She's talking about retiree as a particular social clique.
Yes, but if that's the case...
As in those in retirement communities.
Well, I don't really spend a lot of time in retirement communities.
I feel like...
I mean, I've spent time with two types of old people. The old people I knew who were really old, but they were still feeding the pigs or doing whatever, and old people in a nursing home who are mostly wearing pajamas.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really known a lot of old people in retirement communities.
If you're really wealthy, I think you still become slaves to fashion. If you see your neighbors in the bungalow next to you are dressing a new way or whatever, you might do that. But in general, assuming you're not of the wealthy elite... But you go and you retire someplace to like a retirement, an old people village, of which they have many. Do you ever give a damn about that anymore? Or do you just wear whatever you thought was nice and you don't pay any attention?
Well, keep in mind that some of these people are single.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're single. and don't think that just because they're of advanced age that that doesn't mean
looking
what it means
for
when you're
a senior citizen tale. I didn't even think of that.
So yeah, a lot of them do care. Now I've known people who worked
I'm 35 and I already don't care. But.
I've known people who worked for like the cafeteria in a retirement community or whatever, and you know, their reports to me were there's all types. Of course, they're only going to tell me about the people who stand out. Like the gentleman who gets completely dressed up for dinner, you know?
Yeah, and
you know,
I mean,
suit coat and everything, and that's
I
a
have
different thing.
Had dinner in my grandparents' old people's complex in the dining room with all the old people. I just didn't bother to look.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents dressed the same way they always did, but they've always been rich and they've always dressed really fancy. But it is a dated fancy. They dress like the people on Dynasty dressed. So, like, their clothes are very nice and very well made and very much of a bygone era.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my grandfather, my mom's dad, basically he dressed the way all the blue-collar guys in Greenfield, Iowa dressed, which wasn't too much different than the farmers. You know, work shirt and those cotton slacks and, you know, he...
But you come from boring stock.
Well, yeah, I suppose. But everybody in town sort of dressed like that. I mean,
you come from a boring town.
You would have, but he looked like, I mean, if you took a black and white picture of him, you'd think that the way he was dressed, it was a picture from maybe the 40s. I mean, it did sort of look like that. It was, like you said, it was, you know, I don't know, it was nice, but it was old nice. You know, old-fashioned nice. But yeah, never the stereotype of the, like we were talking about.
Well,
with
that's
the whole
leisure
costume.
Wear.
Yeah, well, I hardly any. I've never known any older people in Iowa, even retirees, to wear what you could call leisure.
I suspect
because they all still work out in the garden, or
I suspect that the stereotype arose in the 80s and 90s because at that time, basically in the 60s and 70s, much of what we're describing there. That was the era of the leisure suits and the wide lapels and the big belts and all that kind of stuff. And I think in the 80s and early 90s especially, probably people who were of retirement age were wearing that because that was what had been fashionable when they were in the prime of their life.
I didn't know anything about any of that stuff you were just talking about, leisure suits and stuff, only in films and TV.
Because nobody
I knew wore
national
that stuff.
Or worldwide fashion trends clearly had nothing to do with anything where you were. I am betting that trends that started before I was born are still creeping their way into men's
clothes
right now.
Actually, I don't think a lot of people ever wore that. I mean, some of them did. I've seen old photographs from like yearbooks and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
but you know, as I was growing up in the 70s. None of the farmers wore that stuff.
Of course not.
Nobody who came to the church, little church I went to,
of course not,
wore that stuff.
Nobody knew. You were like a step away from Amish. We're lucky that y'all had buttons. But I bet at the time when that cliche took hold, the retirees. There were retirees at that time wearing those outfits, but I don't believe it was something that happened when they became retired. I believe it was probably a holdover of the fashion that they had when they were in, like, their 40s.
I suppose.
But I absolutely agree with you that I believe it is a media stereotype that has continued to this day and is false. And, Beth, you should not listen to them. Stop being part of the problem, Beth. Become part of the solution.
All right, let's consider, though, for a second that what if we did do this little study of yours and we found out that, you know, my God, over a 40-year period, retirees, in some places anyway, are wearing pretty much the same thing. How could that be?
Well, here's what I would say. If we developed the ability for time travel and we used that ability specifically to go grab retirees from 20 years ago to compare their fashion to today's retirees, the least of my complex questions would be, how is their fashion the same? I would be much concerned with how we discovered time travel and why, of all the possible uses for it, we were doing this.
Because the hat kind of compel this dude. Don't you understand?
If I get time travel, I'm ditching the hat.
I don't think it'll let you.
Mm. The hat is not master of all time and space. There, I said it.
Here's... even though you know it's not true. Here's what I would say. I would say that perhaps it probably relates to the same thing. I was talking about the farmers that, you know, I grew up around and what mm-hmm. they wore and how similar actually what they wore is to what some of the kids I grew up with who are farmers now wear similar clothes. Why is that? Well, it's because the farmers that I knew growing up, they came to be wearing those types of clothes because they were practical, they worked, they were functional.
And if it ain't broke.
That's right. So now, kids I grew up with who are farmers are basically wearing the same thing. So it could be that when you get to retirement age, there's a certain type of clothing that you know, works better for you. Perhaps there's something about polyester that's even more appealing than it ever was before. Yeah, I don't know. You don't have to iron it as much. Maybe
white belt and shoes.
Well, I don't know. I don't. Maybe those pants that you associate with especially male retirees have like elastic or in them or something, and you need that. But they all look like that. I don't know.
Well, I think it's going to be a weird thing anyway because coming up here, retirees are all going to be hugely obese, which they weren't in previous generations, and that is going to, by definition, have to alter the fashion.
I suppose so.
And if we're going to talk any more about this, we're not going to get to another question.
All right, I'm sorry.
No, I just know how obsessed you are with getting more than two questions. And we're going to have to hurry to get our third, so...
All right. Well, what would someone have to do if they want the hat to give us a question?
They would have to write the hat, and they should write the hat. We could always use more questions. Seriously, people, write in. This is how you get to be part of the show. It is an interactive thing. You become famous, like we are. Write into the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Write us a question, write us a topic, sign it if you want to. If you don't, we'll call it anonymous. But if you want the credit, sign it in the body of the email. And we'll talk about it, whatever the hell it is. We have talked about some terrible, disgusting, depraved things that we really did not want to talk about. We're both thinking Charlie Sheen right now, let's be honest. We're both thinking about that.
God.
We did.
Why did
we
you
did not want to talk about that. It was in the hat. You have that control over us, so...
Anyway, speaking of famous, hard hat number one, Mark McKibben.
Mark McKibben, hard hat number one.
Wants to know, muskmelon or cantaloupe?
Ooh.
Now, I believe this question is somewhat referring to the practice, in Iowa anyway, I don't know if this is common elsewhere, for people to basically use both of these names for the same fruit.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I often hear cantaloupe and muskmelon sort of interchanged, even though they're not the same.
They're not remotely the same. I don't eat either of them, and I know that.
Well, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what the difference is. I just know they're not the same.
I'll tell you this. Muskmelon ain't orange. I don't know what color it is, but it ain't orange.
Oh, what color is it?
I don't know. I just said I don't know what color it is. Seriously, I was like, I don't know what color it is, but it ain't orange. And you, what color is it? It's like the lamest who's on first bit ever.
Well, it's worth a shot anyway. Honeydew melon's green.
Honeydew is green. I don't know. I don't eat any of them. I don't like melon. I've never liked melon.
No. Are you sure muskmelon's not orange? Is it just a matter of the rind? Like one has a smoother rind than the other or something? I don't know what the difference is. I just know that I've heard people call what I'm certain is the same fruit either one of those things. Like some people think they're the same thing.
I've only known orange melon to be called cantaloupe ever. Hmm. And I've heard of muskmelon. If they're the same thing, or people got...
I don't think they are the same thing, but I think people call them the same thing sometimes.
I don't eat melon. It's one of the few... Like, there's stuff that I really seriously don't
eat,
and
melons
are...
Not watermelon either?
I can tolerate good watermelon.
What's wrong? Why?
I don't want it. I don't like it. I don't find it enjoyable. And I can tolerate really good cantaloupe. But I won't... No.
Tolerate. What's wrong with it? Why do you have to tolerate it?
I do not like it.
But what about it don't you like?
I do not like the flavor of it.
It's just sweet.
It is not. It has a specific flavor.
Yes, it does. But I don't
flavor.
I don't see how that's
I do not like the flavor of melon.
Not even watermelon? Oh, man, I wish you guys could see his face while I'm doing this. It's hilarious.
No, I don't. Watermelon, to me, has the least melony flavor of any melon.
So well, it has a completely different flavor than...
There is a certain melony flavor.
That's similar to cantaloupe?
That is similar to all of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I think watermelon's so different.
People also get thrown another food that is like this for me, cucumber.
Okay.
Hate cucumbers. Will not eat cucumbers. And people get shocked because they're like, it has, like, no flavor. And I'm like, it does. It is
cucumber
subtle,
has a flavor.
But it is distinct.
Yeah.
And so does melon.
I know. They all have flavors, but they're very
like
subtle
them.
And nice, pleasant flavors.
I do not like them.
Whatever. I mean, yes, I know they have flavor. And to me, they're pleasant. I don't know what's...
Yeah, not to me.
But why? Does it remind you of something?
No. Since I was very, very little, never liked melons.
Well, you know, we've been
never
through this before where...
There's no food that you don't like.
Yeah, if I wasn't a vegetarian and almost vegan, I'd probably eat anything.
You have no food aversions. And here's the thing. Supposedly, all food aversions are learned. And you can overcome any food aversion. And I don't mean you can still manage to eat it. I mean you can get to the point where you don't dislike it anymore. Any food aversion. Not like an allergy or some shit like that. But actually, if you just like, I just don't like how it tastes, you can overcome any of them.
Well, that's always been my understanding. Although I think it's a little tricky if your problem is with texture. Because, I mean, I've known people who can't eat bananas. I mean, they'll literally, like, start gagging on the sliminess of them or something.
I don't know. It's possible.
I mean, because that's not a flavor thing. That's a...
No, and I've had textures I don't prefer. I've never had textures that, like, really fuck me up. But no, there's a guy, he's a food critic, who wrote a book called The Man Who Ate Everything. And when he became a food critic, he felt it was very important that he get rid of his food aversions because it's not fair.
Yeah.
There's a dish and it just has things he doesn't like in it. And so he managed to successfully do it. And apparently, largely just comes from making yourself eat that food quite a bit.
Yeah,
And I've thought about it because I appreciate that most of the time, anywhere I go, whatever I'm served, I can eat it. But melon is fairly common in things. If I'm eating Mediterranean or Italian stuff, olives and cucumbers, fairly common. And I will not do green olives. And I can only bear... I don't like black olives either, but I can usually work with it if they're in something. And I would love to not have issues with those.
Well, there's actually a saying. Now I have to remember how the saying goes. You don't... let's see.
You don't buy ballpark nachos, you just rent them.
No, you don't eat what you like. You like what you eat.
That's beautiful.
In other words, if you eat it enough, you'll like it. You don't just have this natural genetic like for some things and not other things.
Did Mean Joe Green say that in the middle of Free to Be You and Me?
I don't know. No, the guy I heard it from was doing a stop smoking seminar, and he was...
Well, he was really confused then, because he was talking about eating, and you don't eat cigarettes.
Well, but if you've ever tried to stop smoking...
I have, many times.
If you've been smoking for a long time...
I was.
You know that sometimes you get food cravings or things that... a lot of people gain weight when they're trying to stop smoking.
I did, but I think that was coincidence.
But he was trying to encourage people to eat healthier things... rather than smoke, and usually the thing that you can eat that will help you calm your craving for cigarettes is fruit. But he knew that a lot of people he was talking to didn't like certain types of fruits, and so he was encouraging them to change some of their eating habits so that they could stick with the
program. And those people were like, "I'm giving up smoking. Fuck you! I want a cupcake." That's what happened.
Well,
it may not have happened out loud, but that's what happened.
I'm just saying that when you're trying to help people stop smoking, you have to address a lot of things.
Now,
not just the stop smoking.
Why exactly were you at a stop smoking seminar?
I wasn't at a stop smoking seminar. I was watching.
This was a vision you had.
No.
Was this like...
This is actually a fairly involved story you probably don't even want to hear. Just suffice...
I agree with that.
Suffice to say, I saw it on television.
I feel like that story wouldn't be that involved. And I like how you did it. Unless there's like deeper things where like the television was at the top of a cliff and you weren't even supposed to be watching television that day, but then Batman showed up.
Yeah, that's it. Good. Wow, you're psychic. Anyway, thank you, Doc Brown, Beth, and Mark, for your questions.
Yes, except one of you whose question I didn't like at all. Tune in next week to find out which one. No, not really. Seriously, though, people, write the hat. It's what keeps this shit going.
Write the hat. You shouldn't tell them that part.
Damn it. Write the hat, or we'll keep going. I don't know. Whichever thing you're afraid of, we'll do that
if you don't write.
That's like the whole, you'll be saving one of us. Whichever one you like. Also, side note, Blood Sparrow, you're going to do your comments that way. That's beautiful. At least give us context. Last week, you had comments on the blog that said, possibly? And then another one that said, oh, okay, that's fair. I still have absolutely no fucking clue what you're referring to.
I do. So, I know what she was referring to.
Good for you, Billie Jean.
Do you want me to tell you?
No.
Okay.
She'll never learn if you just tell me. And don't contradict me in front of the children. You have to present a united front. Parenting front.
Yes.
What have I told you about? Okay. So write in. Everybody write in and comment on the blog. And like us on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And do all that stuff. And we'll talk to you next week. And I will have much to say because 2 days from now is roller derby.
Oh, yeah.
Woot! You're in Iowa City. 2 days from now, roller derby. Go there. It's awesome. Okay. Love you guys. Wait, this isn't a call to my parents.
I was wondering what that was about.
Well, we love you guys anyway.
Yes, we do.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.